A common complaint about corn we've been hearing a lot is that it's in nearly everything we consume, and a quick glance at the back of most food packages will confirm that fact. While some people think of the grain as a bit of a villain these days, it actually has a very positive, rich, and complex history. Joining us now to talk about corn on the second installment of our new series called Globivores, Food Travels Around the World Since 1492, are Betty Fussell, author of The Story of Corn, and Zarella Martinez, a restaurateur and author of numerous cookbooks, including Zarella's Veracruz. I'm very pleased to welcome both of them back to our show. Hello.
Thank you, Leonard.
Betty, do we know where corn originated?
We do, in Mexico, in the Balsas Delta Basin near Oaxaca.
And do we have any idea why there? Was it just the right... The right soil, or were there other things related to what came to be corn that predated it?
Yes, it really is evolved radically out of teosinte, a wild grass. So the world's three great cereal crops, wheat, rice, and corn, are all grass. But the huge difference is only corn is not today, as we know it, does not grow in the wild because it's radically different from its birth mama, which is teosinte.
So Mesoamericans found out what people, Zarella, were in the Oaxaca area. Was that Zapotec?
It's not the Zapotecs or Mixtecs. I mean, but this was like way before then. But the thing is that what they say is that corn is tamed people and people tame corn because corn requires the intervention of man to be able to grow, because you have to take the kernels off. So it allowed people to become settled.
So this is also corn changes with the advent of agriculture.
Exactly.
Corn in this continent, you could say, invented agriculture.
Now, it goes by numerous names. There was that commercial some years ago where a Native American said, "We call it maize." But maize is a Spanish word, isn't it?
Maíz.
Yeah.
And in fact, I was talking to Florence Bissell, I think, in London, and she says, I asked her, do you think Mexican food would work here? And she said, yes, now that we have developed a taste for maize.
Because, of course, the Brits use the word corn to mean everything. So when you have the translation of the Bible, Ruth stood in a field of corn. That wasn't corn, as we know it. That was wheat.
So is that what happened when this new grain came to England? They just simply called it corn in the same way that they called those birds that were coming over turkeys, even though they were from the Americas?
In the same way that the Italians called grains polenta.
Now, Zarella, we'll get to polenta in a moment, but how important has corn been to the Mexican diet?
Well, it's crucial because it's part of the trinity, you know, of how when corn is – that was a great discovery of the Mexicans, that by treating it with lake bed salts or calcium, I guess hydroxide, they were able to remove the outer dermis of the corn. And by doing that, when combining it with beans, it created the perfect protein because by doing that, it freed a lot of the amino acids. So you absolutely need that. And then when you add the chili and the tomatoes, you have the vitamin A and vitamin C, so there you have your perfect diet.
But they weren't eating it off the cob the way we do.
No, we don't know that. But they were doing masa, which was...
Masa is flour and
it's
lime.
It's corn dough, yeah.
Uh-huh. And so mostly corn was used for tortillas and
tamales.
And tamales.
Yes, the tamales did not have any fat in at that point.
And this was just accidental that they mixed it with these other minerals to create something that becomes very nutritious?
I think Betty could answer that.
From the beginning, as long as you have fire. So from the earliest fire, you have ashes. You have the alkali necessary to remove the skins. It just makes it easier for grinding. But all of the world's cereals were developed by people who were gathering them in order to make them more edible. But they were all grown for preservation, for winter, when you couldn't just go out and forage. But they also, very early, they were eating unripe corn, calling it green corn.
And you're showing, you put your fingers about 2 inches apart. So these were tiny little things.
The first is the size of my little finger.
How different is it from the baby corn we see now in Chinese food?
It's, you know, it's 7,000 years later. Why wouldn't it be different?
Well, now, go ahead, Darla.
I think the main difference with Mexican corn and American corn that we find here is that the fact that Mexican corn has a soft starch. And American corn has a hard starch, which is flint corn or dent corn. And the Mexican corn makes it, you know, very, you know, chewy and wonderful. The tortilla is very chewy and wonderful. So I think that's, wouldn't you say, Betty, that's the main difference?
Is the flavor all that different?
Flavor and texture. But all our corn comes, everything we eat here is an evolution of a variety of the thousands of varieties of the home corn. But we shouldn't confuse, and we do, because all we eat is sweet corn on the cob. So sweet corn is a type of, and it has far less starch than the kind of Mexican corn that is common that you would see on grills and markets and corn on the cob there.
Now, had it spread by the time Columbus came here? Did he find it in the Caribbean?
He found he was presented little maize cakes, as they called it, on his first voyage to America. And when he landed on Hispaniola, and he took the seeds back.
Uh-huh.
But it had already spread here from Mexico south into the Incas. They developed the Inca settlement, and it moved up north into the Anasazis, into our part of the border. So, yes, it had spread before Columbus came. That's, you know, this is late in relation to corn's real growth.
And what happened when the Europeans saw it for the first time? Did they immediately embrace it?
No. They thought it was for pigs.
Disgusting, because it was not wheat.
Mm. Yeah.
There are some European cultures that still kind of look on corn that way.
It's a pig fodder. The Germans call it pig fodder.
Yeah, interesting because Turkey was in charge of the Mediterranean at the time when corn was brought there, so it became Turkish wheat, like in many parts of the Mediterranean,
and also because
Turkey has been given so much credit for Mesoamerican foods.
Well, yeah, well, they were the ones that spread it.
Ottoman Empire, you betcha.
Now you mentioned polenta. Polenta is like a corn mush. How different is it from masa?
Polenta is just a generic word for grain, just as corn is a generic word in the English language for grain. And polenta came to mean, but not until about the 18th century in Italy, when they needed corn to replace wheat during a famine. Okay, so then it got identified with this particular grain in the Po region. But that was, again, used principally for grinding for winter, for mush.
But that one is not treated with lime.
Correct.
But it is similar in taste to stuff to something you get in Mexican cooking.
It could be. Depends.
There is
it's
a Mexican. Sweeter. There's a Mexican mush. I don't know what word.
Atole. Atole could be.
But in terms of flavor, the polenta is, I mean, not different unless the variety is different and the milling is different. It's not different from any cornmeal grown in the United States, cornmeal mush from dried corn.
Did it spread around the world as quickly as some of the other Mesoamerican fruits and vegetables?
It spread more quickly because it grows. It will adapt. It's a kind of magic, it will copulate with other varieties very rapidly, as they used to say.
Which is one of the problems why we can't get real Mexican corn here in the United States. Because if you put Mexican corn in a field next to the sweet corn, immediately it'll transform, and then it won't be sweet, and it won't be starchy either. You know, so it's not an acceptable mixture.
So what happened? Was corn brought back to the Americas by the Europeans?
No.
Is that how it came to North America?
Not like the tomato.
No. Or the turkey.
Or the peanut.
The turkey was in Mexico. There's varieties of turkeys that were native to this
country. No, but I understand the pilgrims brought turkeys to America with them, thinking that they were a European bird because they were so docile and it was easy to take them on their boats.
That they were native. They were part of the native.
Yeah, and then they found them here as well.
Yeah, okay. This is corn was not being grown in England.
Uh-huh.
This is not part of that.
So how do we wind up with sweet corn?
I have no idea.
So corn is grown in every spot in the world except Antarctica and the Arctic. Okay, so it's had all these evolutions of varieties that will then be absorbed by all of these countries. Therefore, it's going to be what our American taste wants sweet. So we're the only country in the world to develop this particular component of corn to its ultimate, the super sweet.
My guests on this Globivore's look at corn are Betty Fussell, who's written a book called The Story of Corn, and Isabella Martinez, who's included corn recipes in all of her cookbooks and, of course, put them into her restaurants. Her latest is Isabella's Vera Cruz. So, Zarella, you say that the corn that we have here is nothing like Mexican corn. When you go to buy corn, do you buy it at the local supermarket or a green market?
Well, you can't. Well, I mean, in the green market, you can only buy American corn. Mm-hmm. But you can't even get the leaves to make a certain kind of tamal because they use it for fodder. But now you can get, let's say, dried corn masa. But they use American corn. But there are a lot of little stores now, Mexican stores, that carry the actual Mexican corn. So if I'm going to go make pozole, I buy Mexican corn, you know, the cacahuacintle. And you can find it now, and even wholesale. So, but I used to say that it was easier to find my gay worms in stores in Queens than corn, but now you can find it.
Now, pozole has very large corn kernels.
Yeah, cacahuacintle.
Is that similar to popping corn? Where did popping corn come from?
What America developed out of pozole is hominy. Mm-hmm. So I grew up on hominy.
There were hominy grits in the South?
Grits, it's hominy. It's whole grain hominy. So that was once common in the 1930s. Americans could eat hominy because women could make wood ash. And they made their own hominy in them, you know, from the fireplace. This is before electricity took over and eliminated wood ashes at home except for decorative fireplaces.
Now, one of our listeners, Samuha in New Jersey, left two recipes from India on our show page. One combines 2 cups of fresh corn kernels and 1/4 cup of black-eyed peas, which are cooked together in salt water and added to either 2 types of garnish, one with chili, mustard seed, and dal. The other is dal, red pepper, and coriander. What do you think of those kinds of recipes?
I love them. I mean, Sabir Saran does one particular corn recipe that's to die. I mean, it's just wonderful. And there's even a really delicious Chinese one that uses corn, you know, in the Grand Sichuan restaurants. No, I mean, you know, it's everybody can use it. It's a world treasure.
And one of the reasons it's so valuable, not just for its nutritional wholeness, its texture of crunch, its variety of flavors, but it also absorbs flavor. So whatever the palate of that particular culture, it'll come into the corn, and corn is a perfect background.
Now, we've included some of your recipes. Esquites?
Yeah, well, that's a popular snack food in Mexico. I mean, there are places that only do esquites and lots of corners where they sell them. And it's just a corn kernel and with mayonnaise and crema and chili and lime and queso cotija. But there are many variations, and that's one of the things that you see now in many restaurants, even that are not Mexican, that have the esquites.
You also have a recipe for pimpo, or toasted cornflour cookies. How is cornflour different to deal with than the regular flour we're used to?
Well, first of all, you have to toast it. And if you don't have I'm sorry for the commercial, but if you don't have a Vitamix, you cannot make it because it's very hard to grind that corn.
Because Vitamix has such a powerful motor.
Exactly. You can make flour.
But you can make it at home.
You can make it at home, I do, as you know.
Now, Betty, we now find corn-based products in everything from canned vegetables, soft drinks, chewing gum, lipstick, even detergents and embalming fluids. Why is it so versatile?
It's not only so versatile. Another way of asking that question is why was its versatility turned immediately into a full range of industrial products a century ago? So nothing new about cornflakes. Because corn is the only one of those grains of wheat, rice, and corn that contains both sugar, salt, and oil. I mean, sugar, flour, and oil.
Yeah.
The others don't.
Now, there's also a thing that Americans have called corn smut.
Oh, I'm so happy you brought that up.
they throw the corn away when they see it. In Mexico, a farmer sees corn smut, says, ah, huitlacoche, and I'm going to make real money now.
Exactly. And, you know, the thing is that now there's actually a farmer for many, many years now, Glenn Burns, who discovered a way of injecting every single ear of corn with a spore. So we have been lucky in the restaurant business to be able to have huitlacoche. It doesn't taste exactly the same, but it's one of those tastes that has now taken over the United States. I mean, even normal diners really, really enjoy it.
Now, huitlacoche is a fungus that attacks the corn, but it has been compared to truffles.
It is. Tastes like truffles.
Truffles on the cob. And it's a corn smut.
Why did Americans hate it?
Farmers hate it. Farmers hate it because it spreads.
Yeah.
And it only grows on sweet corn. So if you're lucky and have a very isolated plot, you can grow it.
You know, Mexico grows on other corn, doesn't it?
It's primarily sweet corn.
Oh.
Or a variation, a variety of corn that will have a lot of sugar in it.
Now, the Colombian exchange goes both ways, with new world foods going to Europe and Asia and new types of foods coming to the Americas. Zarela, how much of what we think of as traditional Mexican cooking was shaped by those other cuisines?
I think about half, because what happened is that the Europeans brought their ingredients and the Mexicans took them and cooked them their way, combined them with the regional dishes. And the Europeans did exactly the same thing. They took the Mexican ingredients and combined them with Old World and cooked them their way, so which makes Mexican cuisine one of the richest cuisines in the world and one of the reasons that it was recently named part of the World Heritage Patrimony.
I've heard that after Chinese food, Mexico has the most recipes because of all of the variations to different regions.
Yes, I think so.
But they may not all be written down, so you know.
But all tradition. Of them would have corn as a basic ingredient, because everybody has tortillas.
No, well, everybody has tortillas, but the dishes don't all have corn.
Mm-hmm. And so, corn, like everything else in regional cooking, is specific to the tastes of the area.
I would say, well, no, because there are many dishes that are traditional all over: tamales, enchiladas, gorditas, tortillas. That you'll find anywhere with regional variations.
I've just been informed that China is the top producer of corn these days.
I know.
My thanks to both of you so much for participating in our Globivores series, Food Travels Around the World Since 1492. Zarela Martinez. Zarela, you have to open a new restaurant. We miss you. Her latest cookbook is Zarela's Veracruz. And Betty Fussell, her book, The Story of Corn, one of many books you've written. By the way, next week we are going to be talking about chocolate. And one of our guests is going to be Jacques Torres, who actually makes it from the bean. It comes from Mesoamerica.
I know.
Yum.
I made it once at home here.
He can make my chocolate any place.
Thank you both so much for being with us.
Thank you for having us.